Welcome to the Spoutcast, where we spout off the news to those who drink from the well. Alongside me is the diabetic Sarah Wells.
Hello!
Jane Fawcett, and back from rehab, Kevin Tinkin.
Oh my gosh, that's a horrible joke.
Okay, you just like nailed all of us. What about you?
I didn't say anything about you.
You didn't say anything about Jane. Well, thanks, but what about my two friends over here?
And I feel like there's not enough clarity that I was not in rehab here.
It's just a horrible joke, or that Christian is.
What are we going to say about you, Christian?
Go for it. Do it. Now do the intro. Come on, let's see it. I want to see what you have to say.
The vegetarian.
Yeah.
You want me to do it?
Yeah, go for it.
I could totally do it.
All right, let's hear it.
Let's do roast.
Old Johnny No Meat over here.
Go for it. Come on.
All right. Welcome to the Spoutcast, where we spout off the... What? Christian! Oh, my gosh. Welcome to the Spoutcast, where we... I hate you.
This is really happening right now.
Sarah, you do it.
Do it again. All right.
No.
No, Christian.
All right. Hey, we got a great show for you guys.
Are you kidding me?
We got a great show for you guys today. We are going to talk about the sermon yesterday about
how to love your neighbor and speak kindly to one another.
Yeah.
Or how
to give up your right.
What to do about giving up your right when it comes to ministry and the gospel.
Your right.
That's right. And we're also going to talk about student ministries and what's what.
Are we really using this intro?
Yes.
This is going.
This is like the biggest train wreck of an intro I've ever seen.
Hey, this
seen.
Is authentic life.
I have seen
life.
Four people out in the studio dying of laughter right now.
You guys, get out.
I love that joke when you're like, they're dying of laughter, and then somebody goes, well, are they really all dead?
Are they going to be okay?
Yeah. We're also going to chat with our student ministries team just about some changes we're making in WSM. Along with that, we're going to have an outro with Sarah Wells, who is a really great person, and she's just such a great member of this team, who's going to give us some announcements at the end.
And I'll give you some diabetes facts.
That's great.
What about Kevin? What nice thing are you going to say about him?
I'll get around to it. We got some music this week from, I guess I say it wrong, but Frou Frou, Frau Frau.
Or what's the
Imogen
other name?
Heap.
Oh, yeah.
We've already, but this is Frau Frau. I was going through my
it's
tunes.
It's the same
today.
Person, though.
It's just
older.
Just a new.
It's
just,
yeah. I'm into it right now. So that's what we're going to listen to. Stay tuned. And if you don't like this intro, send an email to jane@thewellcommunity.org and let her know.
Or you
how
can
much
call.
Her
no,
cell
nine.
Phone.
No.
All right. Stay tuned. Enjoy some Frau Frau. Up next is some sermon discussion.
Drink a baby down. Are you in all right? Leave your things behind. Cause it's all going off without you. Excuse me.
Paul, in some ways, has the heart of Schindler in this moment where he's saying, look, I sacrifice it all that I could just win one more, that I could just connect to one more. And if by me, he says, not taking a salary allows anyone to see the foolishness of the cross of Christ, I forsake it all. And I realize as I finish verses 18 and 19 that we might understand now what this whole section is about. Chapter 8 isn't about food sacrificed to idols any more than this chapter is about compensation. Chapter 8 and chapter 9 so far is about the willingness to recognize that the gospel of Jesus Christ is a game changer completely. And our rights and our privileges and our expectations and what we want and what we expect and what we deserve and what we should have and what we should get all means nothing. It's all about the gospel. And his life was all about, if I can just get one more, if I could just connect to one more. if by not taking a salary, one more person lends an ear because they know, why is he doing this? Because he's not getting, are you paying him? No. Are you paying him? No. Why is he doing this? Because his boasting is in the gospel, his boasting is in Jesus. And he'd rather reject earthly comfort, deny himself the privilege of receiving what was his rightful due for the sake of just one.
That was a clip from this last week's sermon that Brad gave on 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Correct me if I'm wrong here. Verses 1 through 19. 1 through 18, 1 through 19.
8.
We'll say 19.
19. Dave has given us another
the heads
9.
Up. 19, yeah. Huh? So with that is the whole scripture deals with basically giving up your rights for the sake of the gospel. And in Paul's context, giving up essentially a paycheck for the sake of the gospel, because a lot of people are questioning, should Paul be paid to present the gospel to people? And so this obviously doesn't flesh itself out, and not every single 3,000 people that attend the well is paid by the church, but they are in ministry. And the point of really Brad's message was, would you sacrifice it all for the sake of the gospel? Would you say that's a good sum of the message, Jane?
Yeah, he talked about, would you sacrifice it all? I was thinking of it in the words of like, would you sacrifice your right for the gospel? Right?
Your right to be paid in that context of the scripture.
Sure.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so a couple of things that he brought up, kind of like he was basically saying our right, what we deserve in life, what we think we deserve, means nothing compared to the sake of the gospel and sharing the gospel. And so one of the things he brought up is like, should Paul be paid if sacrificially giving up his money means that he can present the gospel to one more person, then Paul goes, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Right.
And so the question was, should pastors be paid for the sake of the gospel? And, you know, because you are doing it for Christ, should they be paid? Should they not be paid? Brought that up. And basically Paul's response is, well, if the labor is worthy of their pay, then he should be paid. But I kind of wanted to chat about this for a moment, then we'll move forward from there. Have you guys ever, Kevin, we're paid staff at the well?
Mm-hmm.
And you want us to rub that in some more? Or no, I'm just kidding. I mean, what are your thoughts from an outsider looking in of, you know, you've got this staff at the church who are paid to basically work for the church.
Sure.
And ultimately that is your tithe that goes into that. I mean, what is that from an outsider who's not on staff? What is it? How do you feel about that?
Really? You're going to give me,
should I not answer this?
You're going to give me that. You're going to give me this position here. You know what? I'm happy that we're able to employ so many people.
Right.
As, I say we as the church in general, you know, the well, not included in the bigger church, but you know, it's for me as an outsider,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it can be frustrating, you know, when you see a big staff of people and roles change all the time. You know, we talked about, you know, we record this thing out of order. So I kind of heard some of the chatter about, the staff, for junior high
mm-hmm. in high school
and high school. And I can't remember where I was going with that, but anyway, It's if it's worthy, they should be paid. Absolutely. A lot of times what I seem to see a lot of is somebody being put into a role and then trying to make that role worthy of the paycheck.
Within the context of the church.
Within the context of the church. And what I mean by that is, all right, Christian, hey, I'm going to hire you to be pastor. Well, there's seven other pastors. Oh, you're going to speak at this time. Well, how often is that? I'm going to speak every 3 months. Well, what do I do in the meantime? I'm getting a paycheck. I need to do something that's worthy of this paycheck, so I'm being biblical. So what do I do? And you end up, I think what happens a lot of times, what can happen is they end up taking over responsibilities and roles that people who aren't paid, who are in the church, are already doing with gusto, and they love what they're
volunteers.
Doing. Volunteers. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And those roles can get sucked up by those paid staff who are going, I need to do something to justify this paycheck, you know? And that's something I've thought about, you know?
But at the same time, if somebody offered me a job today, I'd have to think about it.
Right.
And then I'd go, well, what the heck would I do? Like, I'd just be a really good friend. Like, I used to joke with my my buddy Matt Heinrichsy, who was the first worship pastor for The Well way back in the day. And I'd always call him the professional friend. It's like, you play guitar and you're a professional friend. Like, and you do a great job. You need a raise.
But, I mean, something that Brad even mentioned in the context of the sermon, he's talked about, you know, there's a pastor who just kind of sits and he sits with people and just chats with them over lunch or over coffee or whatever, and he just listens to their life and talks to them. And it's for the sake of the gospel. And so, yes, that person is employed by The Well. God has put that person in that position and they are doing Christ's work.
Right.
And I see how you can see the other side of it and you feel the other side of it, but
let me give you the fuzzy side of my argument.
Yeah, and let us give you our side of our argument.
The fuzzy side of my argument.
Sarah's about to jump out of her chair.
Yeah, right.
Obviously.
But here's the deal. Listen, hear me out. So the fuzzy side of the argument is I don't think people need to justify their paycheck.
Totally.
I don't think you need to, because I think when we study the eight characteristics of a disciple, it's about that core. If people are humbly submitted to God and God has put them in a position to be a pastor, they need to be a pastor in that role. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of times with the justification of the paycheck, if this is happening or if it's not happening, I don't know. I'm from the outside and on a bad day, I can be cynical and critical.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think people should try to justify it. I think they should just try to live through that humble submission to Christ. And if they're in a position where they're a paid pastor, they don't have to do anything else, you know, to pay for their mortgage and their food and their kids, you know, then just submit and go and do what you're inspired to do. Don't try to force it. Don't try mm-hmm. to force, like, oh, I got to be here 40 hours a week and sitting there twiddling their thumbs going, oh, I'm going to take over this thing or I'm going to do this here and whatnot out of an obligation to feel okay about getting a paycheck. The obligation should be to the Great Commission. The obligation should be to your convictions in your heart, not to that paycheck.
Yeah, and I even think that this scripture is pointing towards that. Absolutely. Your obligation should be towards the gospel. And would you sacrifice it all just for the sake of the gospel? Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to respond? Sarah?
I was thinking about, it's funny how The Well does hire positions that most churches don't hire. Mm. Like, you know, spiritual formation director whose job is to pour into life group leaders, and we're given a budget so we can bless our life group leaders. And that's just unheard of at other churches. I've worked at another church before and that just wasn't, that wasn't part of it. And at first I thought, no, we don't need that. Why are we pay someone to do that? Or why? Cause I could be opinionated first and then I could think about it. But really it allows people to, like people who are in those roles can love and support leaders in a way that they've never been supported before. So now I can take out life group leaders and take them to coffee and ask them, how are you doing? How is your group doing? And it gives it to some people could see this role and think, oh, you just go to coffee. I'm paying you to go to coffee.
Well, like, a counselor's paid to sit and listen.
Yeah, totally. And it's so much more than, I don't know, being a professional friend, you know, because I could see how that could seem, you know, like professional friend. But we're given opportunity just to bless people in ways that a lot of other churches aren't able to or just don't mm-hmm. see the need to. And I love that we do value, you know, appreciating our people. Right. I can only speak from that side of it because that's what part of my job is. So anyways, Jane, what do you think?
Well, something, I mean, it's a different topic than like what you guys all are all camping out on. So can I change it?
Sure.
Nope.
So, you know how Brad was talking that one time about that guy told him that you need to find like only go into ministry if you like reach that Jonah moment.
Yeah, if you feel like God forces you into ministry.
I've heard you should only go into ministry if you can't do anything else.
Yeah, that's exactly what Brad said.
Do you agree with that?
I don't at all.
Well, I think the...
Brad's words were, he didn't do it because he had to, but he didn't do it because he could, but because he had to. Because God put him in the position of, you, this is what I want for you in your life. And I want you to be... I want you to be in ministry, and I want you to sacrifice it all for the sake of the gospel, because, i.e. Brad, you are a great communicator, and you could do a lot of different things in various different realms of the world, and Brad could be a great salesman. Brad could be a great businessman, but God has said, no, this is the context I want you to use your gifting in. You have a big personality, a great communicator, you're a sharp leader.
Yeah.
Use it for the glory of God and for nothing else. And so Brad was backed into a corner and said, this is what you're doing.
Yeah.
And he literally, from his perspective, he felt backed into a corner. He felt like there was nothing else he could do except start the well. Because everything in his being said, I've got to do this. I've got to start the well. And so that's, I think, more the context he's talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, and let me retract. I don't agree with it whatsoever, as opposed to I think when somebody says, if you can't do anything else, you should go into ministry. I think it can be taken in a way as like, oh, you got fired from all your jobs and you're horrible at everything. You should go into ministry. But I think can't, the word can't, meaning like I, in my job.
By the power of the Spirit, I can't.
Right.
Okay.
Like I'm in a job right now where I have to, I got to grind it. I'm just grinding.
Yeah.
You know, and I go in with a smile and I'm just, you know, I'm trying to love on my people and whatnot. But it's not something that is flowing out of the innards of who I am.
Totally.
You know, and there will be a point where I won't be able to do that job anymore because it's just, I've just done it for too long. You know what I mean?
So, and that doesn't mean, well, the ministry is your only option.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the can't behind it, I think, comes from like, you can't do it and be following your convictions. You can't do something else and be following your convictions.
And getting fulfillment from your job and feeling like satisfied from your job.
Right. But I think that's true for everybody, which is why I think everybody's in the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't let your identity reside with your job. You know, and it needs to reside in Christ. And that even goes for pastors. You can't just be the pastor. You need to have that Christ element in your life.
So I'll just continue asking questions. Is that fair?
Yeah.
One of the things that Brad brought up was this concept of when he told his dad said, I think you're throwing your life away. And I believe that there's the flip side where people believe that ministry is really throwing your life away because there's not a lot of success as far as a Western society viewpoint of you're gonna have everything, you're gonna have it all. I mean, you are giving up a lot to do ministry as far as on a financial level and all of the above. You're throwing your life away. That's kind of what his dad said to Brad. Do you take the perspective, and I got a couple questions here, do you take the perspective of ministry is throwing your life away, or you're gaining so much life because of it?
Me?
Yeah. I'm asking you because you're the voice of the people.
Yeah, sure, sure. No, I really probably am not. But no, I mean, you are throwing your life away. But I mean, that's what we're called to do.
Okay.
You know, and I think Brad is, I mean, when Brad's got a nice house,
mm-hmm.
he's got a beautiful family. They're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've had their share of struggles and whatnot, but he's got a good life. You know,
totally.
He isn't throwing anything away. But I think what his dad was saying is like, there's opportunities out there where you can make money and whatnot. And if you're going to look from that perspective of chasing the monkey all the time, that's what I call going to work. and you're just trying to get that next paycheck and get that next raise and whatnot. And somebody says, I'm going to go into a ministry that's nonprofit. Or I'm going to go into a job that's nonprofit, and I want to serve God. I want to serve. Period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't say I'm going to. If you tell your dad I'm going to go serve, I'm going to serve people for my job.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the first response is going to be, "Oh, yay, that's great." Unless obviously he understands and is coming from a different perspective. But are you throwing your life away? I think your life is not yours to have. You
right.
know? You got to give it away.
I think
DC Talk, right?
You gotta give it away. That's my Clippy song. Okay, I was just sitting here thinking, this might be taking a little bit of tangent, but for some people, I think it's better for them, even if they would love to be in ministry or they would thrive even in ministry, it's better for them to be in the secular world because that's where they'd make a bigger impact.
Right.
Like, we've talked a lot about that with some gals at work, like, how big of an impact are we having on the kingdom by being here? Would we mm-hmm. be better out working with non-believers, or maybe this was a good equipping place and then you go out to the world, or because some people have left, like, you know, staffs and Christian environments to go work in the world. And I think that's like, if you're feeling that call, then do that, you know, because the Lord can really use you anywhere. So I don't know. I'm just thinking about that too.
Enjoy those conversations. Mm-hmm. Like, really, like, enjoy that, because I don't know, like, without being cynical, like, that must be really nice to be able to have that conversation. You know what I mean? But that's kind of where I'm at. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, gosh, I would love to have that conversation. Man, I really wish I could just be in the world surrounded by non-Christians and people talking about hooking up and getting drunk and all this stuff. You know, I wish I could be in there, as you're sitting a bunch of your best friends, you know, at work having a conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm getting cussed out and spit on my face by customers who are mad. You know, because they're yelling and stuff. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's a struggle. It's a struggle to go to work, you know, and to bloom where you're planted and whatnot. So enjoy that conversation.
The grass is always greener.
We just had this conversation 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Because like, we can sit at our office and think like, I can name 3 non-believers that I talk to on a regular basis. Wow, yeah. Sarah. Like, really? Like, that's it? Like, go make an impact. And then, but when I've worked in secular places and I think they talk about Jesus at the well, I want to talk about Jesus with the people that I work with. Mm-hmm. No one listens to me here. They're all drunk all the time, you know? Yeah. So it really is just
work. What kind of job are you working?
Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think, you know, I think you guys bring up a lot of good points. And I think, Kevin, you know, you see it from obviously your angle and your perspective. And I think my father-in-law, man, he is like, he thinks working on a church staff is a big joke. And I mean, he thinks that all they do is like go to foreign countries and they just hang out and like laugh all day and play fantasy sports.
We do laugh a lot.
And I play fantasy sports.
And we have a bracket for basketball.
Yeah. And so that's a lot of people see the church from an outsider mm-hmm. perspective. And I think that's even in Paul's context, they are seeing it from an outside perspective. They're going, what does this guy do?
Right.
You know what I mean? And you know, you see it from your side and you go, man, I wish I was in a job where I could have those conversations and I could see those conversations. But on the flip side, I will say this. I am not joking. I've probably had one of the worst months of my entire life in ministries. It has been the most difficult month of my life. I have been chewed out by parents, yelled at by students. A student told me, I like Jeff Bachman better than you. Aww. I've had people tell me I'm stupid, my ideas are stupid, my thoughts are dumb, and people crying because of decisions I've made.
You made me cry right now, man.
And from my perspective,
that's miserable.
I go, I would not wish this last month upon anybody.
Right.
And I go, my only saving grace in this last month of ministry is I am doing this for the sake of the gospel and nothing else. If I did not have that calling, I would quit this job in a heartbeat.
Right.
And I would quit tomorrow if I had the ability to, and if God didn't say, this is where I want you. This is what I want for you. And you're absolutely right, Kevin. There have been days where I have tried to figure out, God, what do you want me to do? Where do you want me to shine today in ministry? What do you want me to do? And like kind of fit some of those molds as a pastor and whatnot. And, you know, I've started things like the Spoutcast because mm-hmm. of those questions. But those are on a good day. Mm-hmm. But I think that a T-Mobile employee or a Well Community Church employee, we all have the same calling, and that's to communicate the gospel. And our context is communicate the gospel in a church setting. And your context, and a vast majority of our listeners' context, is communicate the gospel in your work setting. Yet our callings are the same, but we see it, you see it, Sarah saw when she wasn't working at the Well from an outsider's perspective and going, it must be so great working at the Well. It must be so great working for a church. And right now, I disagree with that statement.
Yeah.
It's great to serve the Lord. Right now, it's not great to work at the Well for me.
Right.
And I mean that sincerely, and it's like, I would hope people could see the other side.
Right.
And I wish my father-in-law could be on the phone with me when I'm talking to parents, or sit in a small group and watch students cry in front of me and tell me they don't like me. And then go, do you think that I'm worthy of my wages that are slim to none? You know what I mean? And So there's a flip side to both sides. And I think that what Paul's saying, and this, bring it back to scripture, is like, Are you willing to give it up? Are you willing to give all of it up, whether you're working at church, whether you're working at T-Mobile, I'm using your context,
sure,
for the sake of the gospel. Would you guys feel like that?
I feel like you just gave a really beautiful speech.
Jane fell asleep.
No, I didn't.
I almost started applauding.
No, say it, Jane.
I think I totally agree with you. I've worked in a secular office before and ministry as well, but I have had my worst experiences in ministry with people being pissed off. Am I allowed to say
cut that out, Dave.
Like literally, like questioning my faith because of decisions that that have hit them on the wrong day. Let's just say,
sure, absolutely.
But I mean, it is those things though where you really have to remember those victories of, like, I had my hardest issue when I worked at Hume, and it was in the summer, and just like that was the hardest job I've ever done, and really having to refocus myself by going to the decision nights and just remember, this is why I'm doing my job, because these kids are coming to Christ because of it. Mm-hmm. So to look at it in that sense of like, that literally I was doing this for the gospel, like doing a part that wasn't like extraordinary, but in the end, like, it's still a life that's saved. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the reason my perspective comes from a place because I've been at church my whole life and in service. My brother was an associate pastor. My dad's been sorry, you guys are looking at somebody painting.
Keep going.
My dad was an associate pastor. I've seen ministry from the inside, you know, and I've seen it from my perspective. And I feel like I am inside ministry. Like, I don't feel like I'm outside of it as far as what the day-to-day goes through. And so, like, when you're talking about the emotionality and the conversations that you have where people go, you know, where they question your faith or things like of that flavor, where they're going, well, I don't know if you should, and blah, blah, blah. I don't get that all the time, but I always feel like I'm about to.
Yeah.
Like, Christian came over to my house and one time, and I was just like, man, I just don't know. But I'm always feeling guilty. Like, I just shouldn't. I don't know what. And he's like, what do you think people are going to find out about you that's so horrible? I'm like, I don't know. I'm a sinner, I guess. I don't know. You know, it's just like, I think that struggle is going to happen, you know, regardless.
Yeah
for sure.
But, in, you know, when it's your job and your relationships and your spiritual life, I mean, I can see it being a whole ball of mess, you know, because if one goes bad, they all go bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I appreciate that we can, in this context, see both sides we can talk about both sides. And I appreciate you being honest and what your feelings are, because if my father-in-law were to sit in that same chair, he'd say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And
I feel like you may be putting a negative spin on what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if you're in a position of ministry, if you're in a position of ministry specifically, and you are acting out of your convictions to justify your paycheck,
yeah,
you shouldn't be there.
You're absolutely right.
If you're there and you're acting out of your own convictions based on your relationship with Christ and your outflow that you have in that communication, then you're golden.
But I think that an average churchgoer is not you, and that line is fuzzy for them. And they could see a person who actually is in that golden spot, but they could think the opposite of
right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so that is something that, you know, continue to wrestle with as someone who attends the Well, even a staff member. And I just, I think it's a good discussion that, you know, if the context comes up again. Yeah, Jane.
But I think I kind of, if I'm seeing what you're saying correctly, anyone who's getting paid working in a secular world or in a faith-based ministry, if they're not doing their job to earn the paycheck they're given, they're doing something wrong anyways, ministry or not.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I would argue, I mean, outside of scripture, I go, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's like, yeah, if you're not doing your work to earn it, then you shouldn't be in that job, period.
Absolutely.
Right. So, cool. Yeah.
What I'm saying is, to make this section longer, Jane, am I just a horrible explainer of my own emotions?
No. I probably took some and spun it based on the month I've had, all
and
of the
your
above.
Father-in-law. Yeah. I just put his face over my head right now. No, what I'm saying is you can't act purely out of, like, we're called to do all things for Christ, right?
Right.
So when I go to work and there's no customers in there and there's, do I sit and watch a movie? Because nobody's going to catch me. Nobody's going to catch me. I'm just there and I'm just going to be here because my paycheck. No, I need to work hard and do that for Christ and whatnot. And I think, but my motivation shouldn't be the paycheck is what I'm saying. You know, it can be a little bit in that secular context, but especially if you're a pastor, the motivation can't be the paycheck. If you hire 21 people to sweep a floor and the floor is clean and the 21, you know, one person's sweeping, the other 20 people are just sitting around going, I got to do something. And they're like, well, let's tear this wall down and rebuild it. Yeah, great job. It's like, that was counterproductive. Why'd you do that? Because I'm getting paid to do something. I've got to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, no, don't just do something because you're getting paid. Do something because you're convicted to do it.
Yeah. Sure. All right. Anyway. Well, I think we've all at least conveyed our thoughts we could talk about this for a while.
And one other thing, I like it.
So up next, we're going to chat about what's going on in student ministries, and we'll bring in Parker and Jeremiah from the WSM team and chat about some changes we're making for junior high and high school. So stay tuned for that. Welcome back, and we are here with, you guys, you have to understand something. I have my Spoutcast team, and that is Jane, and that is Sarah, and that is Kevin, and Dave. Amanda's part of the team, you know, and then I also have another team, and that is my WSM Student Ministries team, and so today we are joined by half of that team, Jeremiah Spears.
Oh, hey.
And Parker Overturf.
What's going on?
Both have been on the Spoutcast, correct?
Yeah. Twice.
Separately.
Jeremiah,
not together.
Time number three.
Sarah Roby, if you are listening, get your game face on because we are having an ultimate Spoutcast trivia showdown between Jeremiah Spears and Sarah Roby.
And I've been studying, Sarah.
I think there is one thing, though, that I just observed today that might trump Sarah Roby, or I don't know how to say it, but might make Sarah Roby super fan over you.
What's that?
What? She's met Manda before.
Right. You did not meet Amanda.
And you just met Amanda today. Yeah.
Now, one thing though, you just get your game face on, start studying, get your trivia ready.
I've listened to all episodes, every single episode.
Wait, don't tell her your game plan.
Yeah, you have Spoutcast push-ups.
I mean, I haven't done anything. I've just been doing sit-ups.
Yeah. Spoutcast push-ups.
Yeah, Spoutcast push-ups.
Sarah hasn't been doing sit-ups or push-ups.
So, Christian, I do just have one question.
Oh, no.
What team do you like better, Spoutcast team or WSM team? Answer very carefully.
You had 4 seconds.
Because you saw us overthrow you, Governor. We can do it again.
Could I answer that I like my teams equally?
Okay, Dad.
Everybody wins. Everybody wins.
Whoa, total parent answer. Yeah.
So I was, for really quick, when I was a counselor at Camp Hammer, like I was such a total jerk of a counselor to other counselors because they would go, oh, my favorite kid in my cabin is this kid, or oh, my favorite kid in my cabin is this kid. And I would be the counselor in the counselor meetings. I don't pick favorites. And they would just go, all right. Hey, one of the reasons why we brought Parker and Jeremiah in here today is because we wanted to chat about some changes going on in WSM, some exciting things happening in WSM. And so I have done a lot of explaining of a, kind of what we're going to be doing to parents and leaders, but I wanted these guys to sit in and share their thoughts as well. So why don't I just jump out and say, hey, here's the changes, and then You guys can kind of jump on in as you feel free, as well as you guys as well.
I'm excited.
Sarah really has no idea, and it's not really that big of a deal.
Apparently, it's been told to everyone except me.
Sarah is flipping out.
As we walked in, Sarah goes, "You're not leaving, right? I mean, you're not leaving."
I just thought Christian is saying he's moving to Hawaii or something.
Oh, yeah. Already had that joke.
One of the changes we're making in WSM is that currently right now, how we do life groups for junior high through high school is we do them by grade. So we do seventh grade guys group, seventh grade girls group. But today, I guess starting today, and we've kind of been announcing it to parents and all the above, we're going to start flushing out basically our plan or our new way of doing life groups. And that is going to be school-based life groups from seventh all the way to 12th grade life groups. The life group program itself stays the same. So a kid shows up to group, there's guys and girls mingling for the first 30 minutes. There's a curriculum, a game, and then they will break off. But in the new model, it'll be like a Clovis West school will gather together from 9th grade all the way to 12th grade. Or let's use Buchanan because Jane's in the room and Jane is a life group leader with some Buchanan kids in her life group.
Right.
So a Buchanan 9th grader will show up and a Buchanan 12th grader will show up and they will all be part of the same life group collectively with the same vision, the same goal of reaching their school for Christ. And so ultimately, their school now becomes their mission field. Where they live now becomes their kind of their mission field. Their community now surrounds around of kind of a school and also like where they all live and whatnot. And so all of a sudden, you start to see these pockets in Fresno surrounding around a school and really gathering like we are the church in our neighborhoods. We are the church at our school. And I, as a 12th grader, can now build into some of the younger kids at campus. A 9th grade girl can see a 12th grade girl and go, "Hey, can you pray for me? This happened to me today." And a sophomore can say to a freshman, "Hey, I didn't see you at life group last week." And there's a lot of connections that way. But when they're actually in life group, they will still separate by 9th grade and 10th grade. We'll meet with girly leaders and guy leaders, and 11th grade and 12th grade will meet with guys and girl leaders as well. Does that kind of make sense? That's a quick overview of exactly what we're doing.
So they'll still be separated by gender and by grade, but we will have to combine seniors and juniors and then sophomores and freshmen.
Sometimes it could work out either way. Yeah. So
what if there's a school that only has like two people in it?
Oh, good question.
That's a great question. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
So we recognize that there is a lot of schools, especially high schools and junior highs in Fresno. So we have to be strategic about what schools do we target and whatnot. We took a poll of all the kids that go where into what schools, what junior highs. And what we found is that a majority of the kids in our ministry attend Clovis West, Clovis North, and Buchanan, and those junior highs that tie in with them. So that's Alta, Granite, and Kasner. And if there are kids that attend, they're homeschool kids, they're a Fresno Christian kid, those kids, we would hope that they would choose to go to a group within their neighborhood. So if I live in the north side of town, then I'm going to go to Clovis North, but I go to Fresno Christian. Mm-hmm. They also have a choice to go with where their friends are going if their parents are willing to drive. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, though, all Fresno Unified kids are going to go to our Fig Garden group. And so Fresno Unified kids on that side of town will go to our Fig Garden group. Oh, okay. And then we're going to have a Clovis campus group as well, where our Clovis High kids and our Clovis East kids, Sunnyside kids, those kids will then go to that campus or that house. So we're still meeting in homes, but we're going to have five strategic groups along with our just killer group right now, our Sanger group as well. And they're the kind of ones that have modeled this for us, and we've seen a lot of fruit from this group. And so we're making that transition to all these groups starting in the fall of next year. So we're rolling it out now so parents, leaders, students can really get on board with the program that we're excited about doing. It has been definitely challenging, but this is something, Parker, you guys did this back in Puyallup, right?
Yeah, kind of a version of it. I think it's one of the things that's really good about it is it just helps us take care of kids better. You know, we're able to just really say, we're going to just be able to love kids at a specific campus. It takes a little bit of pressure on our leaders to kind of go to 15 different events. They can just say, "Hey, I'm going to go to the volleyball game and the basketball game this week at Clovis North or Clovis East or whatever school they go to," and really just just love those kids and really have a vision for how do we reach a specific campus for the Lord with the gospel.
Yeah. So. And I think this is really pushing our kids, seventh grade really through 12th grade. This is pushing our kids to now be the church and to really ultimately be like Christ on their school campus. You know, another thing is that, you know, Jane leads a group of Buchanan girls. And oftentimes what can happen is when you mix, let's just say a group of Buchanan guys that play football and a group of Clovis North guys that play football, that doesn't necessarily mesh as well as you'd think. And so our hope would be that now you have a group with Clovis North kids and a group with Buchanan kids, and they really now get a build into their football team, and they can, you know, Brett, he's in your guys' small group. He can invite somebody to group and go, hey, come to life group. And they go, why would I want to do that? Well, every single person that goes is from Buchanan.
Which is kind of something they've already started on their own.
Yeah, right.
That they call it, I forget what they call it, but they meet on like Monday or Thursday or something.
Right, yeah.
So that's already happening. Just something so organic that they've done on their own.
Totally. And I feel like we missed that opportunity to create a space for them to do that.
For sure.
Because this ultimately creates an environment where a kid now can invite people to church, right?
Yeah, and if you have seniors, right now what we run into now is this clickiness between grades.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got freshmen who all hang out with each other, sophomores who hang out with each other, seniors, and our freshmen have no idea who seniors are.
Yeah.
And they go to the same school, they're in the same youth group, they go to life group at the same time with the same leaders that are in WSM, and they don't ever get to meet those seniors, and so now it's a great opportunity for the seniors to be able to build into those freshmen and go, hey, come to life group.
Yeah.
You know, and if a senior comes up to a freshman and is like, hey man, like how's life going? How's school going today? What's going on in your life? And other seniors are going, whoa, time out. We never talk to freshmen. Why are you talking to a freshman right now?
Yeah.
Then that is a great opportunity for that senior to go, man, this kid's in my life group. Like, we know about life, what's going on with each other. You know, I pray for them, and they're like, whoa, what is this? What's life group? And it's such a great opportunity to really, like Parker said, reach that campus with the gospel. So these students can actually be Christ to each other, as opposed to having a couple freshmen from North, a couple freshmen from Clovis, a couple freshmen from Buchanan, and then they never see each other at school. So they never have the opportunity to be Christ to each other.
Yeah, and even going back to Sarah's question, you have a Fresno Christian kid that might not get to live out that vision as much on their school campus because it's not directed at it, but the group in and of itself, the goal of the group is still to spiritually form these students.
Totally, yeah.
And so it's not like every single group, it's like, go be the church at Clovis North or whatever, or go be the church at Granite Ridge. It's more like, man, be the church in your community and be the church where you're at. And where you're at for 40 hours of the week is at your school campus. Yeah. And so we as a leader, you know, Jane is a life group leader, and she has 2, 3, maybe 4 if she chooses to hang out with a girl outside of group a week with these girls in your life group. They get to be with each other for almost 40 hours of the week. They're going to have more influence over each other than we are over them. It really in the grand scheme of things. And so, but along with this, this is a change in the ministry.
Yeah, totally.
And changes. Sarah, how long have you been part of the Well?
Year and a half, almost 2 years.
Jane, how long you been a part of the Well? Same?
Yeah.
We change a lot, right?
Yeah.
Change is definitely a norm at the Well, would you guys say?
Mm-hmm.
And
but I don't think we change just for the sake of change.
We don't change just for the sake of change.
It's usually, I don't think I've ever seen us change just for the sake of change. It's always been like, we feel like this is definitely where God is leading us, and we've got to do it, you know?
And I think we try a lot of things because we want to find whatever is most effective.
Yeah,
and so we're always trying new things to see what would be the best.
One of our even staff values is to be innovative. And this is a very innovative way of thinking about youth ministry. This is really, going to school-based life groups is not a new thing, but how we do life groups with adding the school-based life groups, that's a new thing, a new concept that we really feel like, man, this is something we want to do this year, but not just change again next year. This is the future of where student ministries is going. And, you know, this has been something that I think we're all really excited about.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
And it's just one of those things. It does take time to adjust.
Yeah.
It is new. You know, we have students in these groups that have been together for a really long time.
Yeah.
And it does require them to get outside of themselves a little bit and really take a little bit of vision of just realizing like, man, I need to start living out for Christ.
Yeah.
And we are asking them to change, but we are ultimately asking our students and parents to change for the betterment of the group in the future.
Yeah.
And this is going to benefit the seventh, eighth, ninth graders that are coming up into the ministry. And really in 3 years, they're not going to know any different.
Totally. And the schools as well. You know, I think that there's so many reasons why the change is so good. For the betterment of the students coming up in the future and the schools in the future. I just imagine, you know, Sarah, you talked a little bit, you asked the question of, well, what if there's a smaller mm-hmm. group of students who come from this one particular school? And, you know, for us, it would be so awesome to see, you know, let's say, let's just take Clovis High for example. We've got maybe 5 students from Clovis High let's just say, and there's only 5 students, but they're meeting with Clovis East and they start inviting friends. Well, then eventually if that mm-hmm. can break off, it gets to a point where they can break off and they become another life group where they're just reaching Clovis High. And so the hope would be that all of the schools would grow to a point where we could have a life group house for each of the schools. And those leaders, those students, their mission field is, like Christian said, where they are 40 hours a week, if not more, if they play sports all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's what they're focused on, of sharing the gospel with these students who, I mean, really, we're asking 150 students to change for the sake of thousands of students at schools who don't know Christ, mm-hmm. you know? And so what a great opportunity.
Parker's brought up a bunch, just that concept of.
Yeah.
Yeah, for us too, it really just fits into our model, or the model that we have, just it's really just a continuation of just implementing that model and just being able to say, man, we don't want small groups to be the end goal. We don't want a life group to be kind of where all these kids land. And sometimes it has the tendency to get really inward focused and just mm-hmm. really about this group of people. And just we want to continue to just connect them to reaching students at their campuses, wherever they go to school or in their neighborhoods or wherever, just where they're at. Just how do we begin to spiritually form ourselves and each other, but then also just look outward and focus on kids that may not know the Lord or just go to church or anything like that. How do we reach those kids as well? So,
yeah. And I think, you know, that's just tough. It's definitely, you've got a kid who's been coming to this church for 4 years, he's had the same people in his life group, the same leaders, and that is difficult to go, yeah. I have to accept new people into my life and new people into my group, and I think those are some of the challenges we're running into, but I mean, you can even tell, I think by our sound of our voice, we're really excited about this change, and we really think, man, this is the future of WSM, and this is what's exciting, and so it's this concept of just get on board, watch what happens, because if we have leaders or students that aren't on board, it can only be a cancerous thing within the ministry, mm-hmm. I believe. And our hope would be that everyone would at least catch the vision and see the vision and go, this is good. I trust these guys. I trust that they didn't just make this decision overnight, but we've been thinking about this since before you even came on staff, yeah. Parker. And it's just like, we are... we believe this is what's best. And so if you're hearing this out there and you're a parent of a student in the ministry, you know, contact us. We want to have these conversations with people one by one. And we have to do these big rollouts of, hey, here, let's drop this bomb or whatever. But the reality is we also want to have those one-on-one conversations of, I know this implicates your kid. I understand that is, you know, they've grown up in this group together for a long time, but our hope is to really begin to be more like Christ, begin to be more like the church. And so we're excited about this. And it is on one end, I could see a lot of kids saying, I'm out, I'm over it. And our hope would be that wouldn't happen. Yeah. But on the flip side, man, what could happen? Where could the kids get at spiritually when they start being like the church? So
totally.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've covered everything we're doing. Yes.
Yeah. No, that's mm-hmm. good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys sitting in here, Sarah, do you understand?
I understand.
Okay, yeah. Jane?
I'm in.
All right. Yeah. So
I see the vision. So. I think it's a great vision.
Cool.
Yeah. Have you gotten a lot of pushback from parents and students?
We'll talk about that off air.
Oh, okay. I think just from like my own group, even though like just looking at it and observing that, even though we are heavily stacked with Buchanan kids, mm-hmm. like I think this makes perfect sense because I do see those kids are drawn to one another because that's who they see on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of for the seniors to pour into the lower grades. That that allows them to take responsibility for their faith and for the faith within their school. And I just think that this is going to be a really cool change because they – maybe this is just my group, but the schools don't always mesh with each other. And so
I mean, that's across the board.
Yeah. So to see that, like – Not necessarily that I think this is like making it easy on them to like integrate, because there is going to be the different like freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, whatever. Yeah, yeah. So I just think it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool. And you know, I think Jane brings up even a good point. It's just like this is happening now, but I think what in 3 years we're going to start to see the fruit of it when those older kids are pouring into those younger kids, and then those younger kids, they get to now be the older kids.
For sure.
And so this is not something we're expecting next year to tell all the parents everything's going great, you know, like up 100% in attendance. No, it's going to take 2-3 years to really get going, but we're excited about it. And contact us if you have any questions. Absolutely, thanks for being here, guys, and taking some time to just chat about it. Up next, we'll close out the show with some announcements. And enjoy some more frou-frou. Welcome back, and Sarah, you got some announcements?
You bet your bottom dollar I do.
Wow,
hey, that's crazy. I really have a dollar.
Can I have it? Well, here's some announcements. They're pretty similar to last week's announcements. So,
Sarah, watch it. You're going newscaster on us.
Oh, my gosh.
No more Dr. Pepper freeze for you.
Shut it. Okay, so Discovery is happening May 19th. If you want to learn more about the church and hear Brad Bell speak for 5 hours, come to Discovery and sign up online, and you get breakfast and lunch. And it's here at the North Campus, May 19th at 8:30 in the morning until 1-ish. Tri-tip sales are going on. We do a fundraiser every year to support our summer missions teams. I'm on one of those teams, so come buy a lot of tri-tip. As is Jeremiah. Yeah. You're right. Come buy tri-tip and support us. And the way you could do that is you can go online and order a $40 tri-tip ticket, and that will get you a meal for four. And it's tri-tip, rolls, green beans, and rice pilaf. And you can order those this Sunday, and you pick them up on May 20th. And Jane, why don't you take it from here?
So I know Fake's doing this too, but North Campus is having a connecting event on May 20th in correspondence.
Oh, Clovis is doing it too.
Oh, then I guess every campus is.
Mm-hmm.
So the North Campus, immediately following 11 o'clock service, we're going to have bounce houses, volleyball nets. We'll cut your tri-tip. We'll give you plates, forks, knives, drinks, everything. All you got to do is buy your meal, pre-order your meal, and bring a lawn chair or a blanket, and we'll provide the fun.
Is there a weight limit on the bounce houses?
I was going to make a funny joke about Kevin about the bounce houses, but...
I will take my shoes off.
Okay, good.
And when you order your tri-tip, make sure it goes to the London team, because that's my team.
The money goes all to the same place. Yeah.
No, you can direct it to one person.
All right. Well, so Sarah Greederson over there.
Listen,
we also have a connecting event after the 7 p.m. service. We're bringing in, for like the college age crowd, we're bringing in a couple people to play music. We're going to tear down all the chairs and set up tables, and you can eat your meals in there. So if $40 sounds too much for you to buy a meal, you college poor kids, $10 for your share works too. So get three other people and buy a meal for $40.
There you go.
Sounds like Clovis is doing one after theirs. Yeah. And Fig too.
We're not supplying bounce houses though. Yeah. We're supplying tables. Kevin, you could go there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening to The Spout. We are
out.